Retail banking has become more like a public utility. Even non-bank entities like hedge funds and insurance companies have to operate under the unsleeping eye of the new Financial Authority for the Regulation of Systemic Institutions, FARSI. Despite FARSI's extensive powers, the U.S. government is still grappling with the fiscal legacy of the crisis. The federal debt is now around $20 trillion, $3 trillion higher than the Obama administration forecast in its 2009 budget. The top income tax rate is 45%. The S&P 500 is down to 418, where it was in December 1991, a decline comparable to that between 1929 and 1934. The United States, it appears, is stuck in the middle of its own lost decade, with real GDP having grown by barely 1% per annum since 2010. We started out calling it the subprime crisis. It quickly became the credit crunch and then the global financial crisis. By 2013, a new name has stuck: the breakdown. The breakdown of the American colossus has fundamentally altered the international economic order. China's GDP in 2013 is half that of the United States. In 2006, it was only one-fifth as big. The U.S. dollar has halved in value against the Chinese yuan following a Russo-Chinese initiative to replace the greenback as the international reserve currency with the International Monetary Fund's special drawing rights, satters. Oil, for instance, is priced in satters. For the newly elected U.S. president, Jeb Bush, who defeated Sarah Palin for the Republican nomination in 2012, the time has finally come to put America first. Treasury Secretary John Paulson says he is optimistic about his negotiations with the IMF to repay the $150 billion satter loan negotiated by his predecessor. An investor in gold mines all over the world, Paulson is enthusiastic about the president's plan to return the United States to the gold standard. At the G4's latest meeting, the Brazilian, Russian, Indian, and Chinese foreign ministers unite to condemn Commerce Secretary Lew Dobbs' latest round of tariffs on imported apparel and automobiles. Meanwhile, Defense Secretary Max Boot confirms that USR, for robot, forces will continue to be deployed in the radioactive zone around Bashir as part of Operation Iranian Freedom, launched by the new Bush administration to support Israel's recent strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities. With unemployment stuck at 12%, many Americans are excited by the military successes in Iran. The Islamic Republic inflicted several humiliations on President Obama's administration after his disastrous visit to Tehran in 2010. However, people are more nervous about the naval clashes between American and Chinese forces in the South China Sea. If this scenario strikes you as too pessimistic, think again. From 1929 to 1933, the stock market rallied several times on the long way down to the bottom. In fact, the Dow Jones Industrial Average moved up by at least 2% on 15% of the trading days between October 1929 and December 1932. On 34 trading days, it rose by more than 5%. True, post-World War II recessions on average have lasted only 10 months from peak to trough, but the present crisis is no average recession. Back to the 1870s. One hopeful possibility is that this recession will be no worse than the two worst recessions since 1945, those of 1973 to 1975 and 1981 to 1982. If that's the case, a recovery should be underway by the time this article is published. But consider another scenario. Suppose this recession resembles neither the Great Depression of 1929 to 1933, nor the big recession of 1973 to 1975, but is more like the long deflation of the late 19th century. That one began after the financial panic of October 1873 and dragged on until March 1879. Although it was more protracted than the 1930s depression, the 1870s slump was less painful. In 1873, as in 2008, the trouble began with a monetary policy misstep. The government demonetized silver, saying that only gold could be used to back banknotes. The deflationary effects proved unpopular, particularly with indebted farmers. A technological and construction boom in the form of railroads was coming to an end. A major bank failure signaled the beginning of the panic. Philadelphia-based Jay Cook & Company blew up.